I'm holding on Mahmud Dawood, Ahmed Bey's the second line from the bottom. Continuing about the Din of Tefillin, the last thing we learned was about the order of the Parshiyos. The Gemara had mentioned the four Parshiyos. Rashi and Tosfos argue about what the meaning of that order is, what the meaning of the Gemara's statement is, whether it means what we call Rashi's Tefillin or what we call Rabbeinu Tam's Tefillin, with Shema before V'Hoyim Shemaya, according to Rashi, or V'Hoyim Shemaya before Shema, according to Tosfos. Incidentally, about Shemush Rabba and Raiva that we were talking a little bit about yesterday, where, again, each of them, when it comes to the Shorosh, is an exact mirror image of the respective ones of Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. There's an interesting exponent, there's an interesting point about it from a Chaim Brisker that says that actually, like this, you know, we always place the Tefillin Shorosh with the Ma'avarto, which we're going to learn about soon in the Gemara, the side with the strap above and the bias below. But technically, he says, if you were to put it the other way around, it still would be Yotze. In fact, with the Shoyad, it mentioned, the Rishonim mentioned, there used to be two different minhagim of how to put on the Shoyad, with the bias above and the Ritzua below, or vice versa. Nowadays, as far as I know, the universal minhag is Ritzua above, but it wasn't always that way. So he, so sort of Chaim explained that with the Shorosh, it's actually the same way, and therefore it would come out that literally, if you were to put on a Shorosh of Rashi upside down, then you Yotze Shemush Rabba, and vice versa as far as Raivet. After all, the order of the writing of the Parashiyos is the same according to everybody. So therefore, that would be another reason why only Yechidus Segula wear Shemush Rabba and Raivet, because as it is, on a day-to-day basis, not even so much if you put it upside down, but when you wear it the normal way, then you Yotze, in a certain sense, according to Shemush Rabba and according to Raivet, respectively, because according to them, all you would have had to do is flip it the other way around, and it would be equally kosher. So it's an interesting trap, another idea why we don't follow those opinions in practice, and only Yechidus Segula do. Okay, so now let's talk about, we said you have that order of Parshiyos. So Omer Abchanan al Omer Rav, Hechlif Parshiyos Seh Psulis. If you were to switch around the Parshiyos, then it would be possible. And then we're showing him talk about whether we're talking about the order of the writing of them or the order of the placing them in the Batim. In fact, both are true. They have to be written kesidrum, they have to be written in the order of the Torah, and they have to be written and they have to be placed in the Batim in the correct order. In fact, as we talked about yesterday, when it comes to Rabbeinu Tam's Tefillin, the sofer has to, and in the case of the Shoyad of Rabbeinu Tam's Tefillin, the sofer actually has to leave a blank space where the parasha of Shema is, where the parasha of Ahoyim Shemaya is going to go, because in Rabbeinu Tam's Tefillin they'll be third, and then write Shema in fourth place, and then go back and write Ahoyim Shemaya in third place, because they, even Rabbeinu Tam agrees, at least the way Shidduch Kubetzis learns him, that they do have to be written in order. So the Gemara says, Omer Abaya, Lora Moran, this is what we're saying, that the Tefillin Apostle would only be Ela Gav Yosa, only if you were to switch around an inner parasha with an outer parasha. So Rashi says that we're talking about that he wrote them out of order. Hagosabach changes it to say that Rashi is saying he placed them out of order. But again, the idea is, in other words, specifically between an inner and an outer one. So Rashi explains like this. Say, for example, Kaddish is an outer one because it goes on the extreme, it goes on one side of the bias. It goes on the extreme right, on the extreme right towards the viewers, from the viewer's point of view, or the left from the wearer's point of view. Next to it, you have V'Hoyakiviyacha. V'Hoyakiviyacha then is considered an inside one in the sense that, to begin with, when you put it in the Tefillin, it's not going to be in one of the outer compartments, it's going to be in the second compartment, which is an inner compartment. So now, if he switched around Kaddish and Vahoyah Kiviyacha, for example, then Abayah says that would be the case, that it's possible. Or Bar Yosso, the Gav Yosso, the other way around, he took one that was supposed to be on the outside and switched it with one on the inside. So you put Kaddish where Vahoyah Kiviyacha goes, for example. And you put Vahoyah Kiviyacha where Kaddish goes. Abu Gav Yosso le Gav Yosso, or Bar Yosso le Bar Yosso, but says Abaye, if you were to put an inner one where an outer one goes, or an inner one where another inner one goes, or an outer one where an outer one goes. So in other words, let's say, for example, so you have the two middle batim are supposed to contain V'Hoyakiv Yacha, and then, let's follow the opinion of Rashi's Tefillin, for example, the next one would be Shema. So Abaye is saying, if you were to switch around V'Hoyakiv Yacha and Shema, then it wouldn't be a problem. And the same thing, if you were to switch around Kaddish, and according to Rashi's Tefillin, the last one is V'Hoyem Shemaya, so Abaye is saying, if you were to switch those around, it also wouldn't be a problem. As long as you have each one, as long as you don't switch between inner and outer ones, then you're fine. So something that Shichuk Kedushim Amichosim Rashba discusses, in other words, that in that case it sounds like the why even does Abaye have to mention inside to outside and outside to inside? Obviously, if you switch them around, then it's both. There's no reason to mention both of them. So he talks about that. If we say that Rashi's Girsa is, we're talking about that he wrote them. So either he wrote them out, it can mean that he wrote them out of order, and then it can mean, in other words, that he wrote the Hayyuki Yaha first and then put it in the wrong compartment, and then necessarily when he writes the other one, he's putting it in the other compartment. Anyways, but Abaye says, so that would be a problem, but if it's inner to inner or outer to outer, then Abaye says not a problem. Amalei Rava, but Rava says to Abaye, Maishna gav yosa la bar yosa, or bar yosa la gav yosa. Why? What would be the difference when it comes to inner versus outer, and you agree it's possible? The problem is, the one that's supposed to be seeing the air, the one that's supposed to be towards the outside, and like, you know, that bias that contains that parasha is exposed to the outside air, like a chazir, it's not seeing it, and therefore you agree it's possible. And one of the inner compartments, which is not supposed to be seeing the air, which is supposed to be embedded among the other ones, Kohazia is seeing the air, and you agree that that's possible. Well then, well then, wouldn't you have the same problem? If you have an outer one switched with an outer one, or an inner one with an inner one, you'd have a similar problem. Fine, each one is seeing, you have them seeing the air respectively, but which airspace? The one that's supposed to be seeing the air, that's supposed to be exposed to the outside on the right, namely Kaddish, which is supposed to be on the right side of the viewer, Kochaz Yavir, smell. Instead, you switched it with Vahoyim Shemaya, and now it is exposed to the outside, but it's on the wrong side. It's on the side. It's on the side which is seeing the left. It's on the left side. We're just smell Kochaz Yavir Dimin, and the one that was supposed to be seeing, that was supposed to be exposed on the left side, is instead exposed on the right side. So that wouldn't work either. Evolution. So there's no actual difference, says Rava, to Abaye, and in any case, when you switch around the parashias, then it will be possible. Now, we just said that the Reb Chaim Brisker does point out that if you have all the parashias are in their correct compartments, that you flip over the tefillin, and instead of wearing them with the ma'avarta side up, instead you wear them with the bias side up, then it would be kosher. But that's not what the Gemara is talking about. We're talking about if you switched around the order of any of the four parashiyos, which is how it comes about, therefore, that, in other words, what we call Rashi's tefillin would in fact be possible, according to Rabbeinu Tam and all the other Rishonim who hold like him, and vice versa. What we call Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin would be possible, according to Rashi and all the Rishonim who hold like him, which is why, in fact, you don't have the option of just saying, well, let's just make one pair and we'll be yotze both. You have to have a necessity. You have to have two pairs if you want to be yotze both of them. And again, is the idea. If you're wearing the both of them at once, then as it says in Shulchan Aruch, you would have to have in mind one of them is the true tefillin, and the other one is just ritzuas, because otherwise you're over on Bal Tosif. And if you wear them one after the other, as we do, then that's, you don't specifically have to have that in mind, but then you make a bracha on one of them, and it covers the other one. We usually make the bracha on the Rashi's tefillin, because the poskim in the end accepted the opinion of Rashi. In fact, the Rambam writes in one of his Truvas, the Rambam doesn't use the names Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam, he wasn't familiar with them, but he mentions in one of his Truvas, for example, that he says, I used to wear tefillin, I and many other people from my Kehillah used to wear tefillin like Rabbeinu Tam's version, but then I found sources that say that actually it should be like Rashi's, and therefore the Rambam says, I got myself new tefillin. So, and from then on, he wore only from then on, but after this, he wore only Rashi tefillin. So the halacha was in the end accepted like Rashi, which is why we make the bracha on it, but nevertheless, b'diyeved, you make it on the Rabbeinu Tam's, you yotze. They say, I don't know if there's any source for this, that inevitably if a person wears both pairs, it's going to happen at least once in their life that they mistakenly put on the Rabbeinu Tam's first and end up saying a bracha on them, and then you're still yotze b'diyeved. Okay. The Gemara goes on. V'omer panana omer ra'an. And Rav Kanana also says in the name of Rav, he was more genuine about how tefillin are made. Titura the tefillin halach l'moshe misinai. The titura of the tefillin, the fact that they have to have a titura, is halach l'moshe misinai. Rashi describes like this. So you place you have, like we talked about yesterday, the bias is made basically like the bias of the shorosh, that is, we're talking about. The shoryad is similar, but it doesn't only have one compartment. You put the parashias into the fingers of the glove, kind of as Rashi had described yesterday. You take the skin and you stretch it out over a flame to make something like the fingers of a glove, and those are the four batin. Now, so you place the parashiyos in through them. Then what you do is, then Rashi describes you leave the on the other three on three sides of the tefillin, and then you cut off the leather at that point. The fourth side you leave longer and you fold it underneath the rest, so it closes up the bottom of the glove kind of. And then you sew it together. So that tart is called the titura. Titura literally means a bridge, because Rashi explains that wide piece that goes underneath the tefillin is a plank of a bridge. It comes out from Rashi that the four compartments and the titura are all made from the same piece of leather. Tosfos points out that in no times the minhag was not to do that. The minhag was actually that you would have the cube of the tefillin would be made from one piece, and the titura would be made from a different piece. Nowadays, I think it's much more common to do like Rashi said and actually try to make them all from one piece. In any case, the fact that you have to have that piece underneath is halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. There are various other opinions among the Rishonim, Tosfos brings an explanation from the Aruch that the Tetura is none other than the Ma'avarta. The next thing we're going to talk about is the Ma'avarta, the passageway through which the strap goes behind the tefillin. So Tosfos brings from the Aruch that the Tetura and the Ma'avarta are two names for the same thing. But the halacha is that they're considered two separate things, and the titura is again that thing underneath the tefillin, the wider thing underneath it that closes it up from the bottom, and which also it's square like the tefillin themselves, and then the ma'avarta sticks out behind it. Abaya says the ma'avarta of tefillin is also halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Namely, in that folded over area, so you have that area where you're folding over to make for the titura, and it's going to go underneath, and it's going to close up the bottom of the tefillin. You leave over there open a passageway over there. Ma'avarta literally means passageway, and you put the ritsua, and you put the strap of the tefillin, shoyad or shorosh, respectively, and you put it through there. That way, you can move around the tefillin relative to the strap, and you adjust it. This is, we use it when you need to adjust the tefillin. When it comes to the tefillin shoyad, to begin with, it's movable on the strap over there, and then we put it on the bicep. So the fact that the tefillin has to have that, says Abaya, is also halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Then v'omer Abaya, and Abaya says another point, shin shel tefillin halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. The fact that you have to have a shin on the tefillin is halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. So not just one, actually, it's two shin, and we have one on each side. So the fact that you have to have that is halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. Why a shin? There's many explanations. There's many other explanations. Tosfos brings from Shimush Rabba. We talked about yesterday. Shimush Rabba is a sefer from one of the Gaonim, Rabbi Sar Shalom Gaon, that talks about halachas of tefillin. Notably, his opinion over there is like Rashi, but in reverse order, like we talked about before. So he says that, first of all, he mentions that it's not just shins, but you have one on each side, one with three heads and one with four heads. So there's a lot of different explanations why the tefillin should need to be there. So the Sirius brings, the Taz brings a few different points. One of them, so first of all, it represents a name of Hashem. It represents part of the name Shin Dalad Yod. In fact, according to Rabbeinu Tam, that you put Shema in the last compartment, and you have Kadesh in the first compartment. So then you have the Shins represent Kadesh and Shema. According to Rashi, of course, that wouldn't work, but still, maybe according to Rashi as well. In any case, it represents that. The shin represents that the number of days a year in which you wear tefillin, because you don't wear tefillin on Shabbos and Yom Tov, so you have 300 days a year when you wear tefillin. The shin is 300. You should take the name Yudke Vovke and turn it with at, where you use atbash on it, so then the yud becomes a mem, the hays becomes tzadik, so the vov becomes a pei, and you add that up, mem tzadik, pei tzadik, it equals 300. And you have a wide variety of different other explanations of what the shins represent, and why. And another point is why 3 and 4, as Shmuel Rabbe is saying. One point is that it represents the one point is that it represents the writing on the luchos. The luchos, the writing was engraved through and through, as we know. So you have any place there was a shin on the luchos, then you would have 3 engravings, but then you have, so now you have the space between the 2 heads of the shin, and the space around them makes almost like another shin, makes like a reciprocal shin, and that would be 4 heads, 2 sides and the 2 middles. So therefore, the 3 and 4 heads of the shin represent that point, represent the writing on the lophus. And there's the idea, in other words, that Hashem puts on tefillin when we do, so to speak, and therefore it's reciprocal, and therefore the two shins represent that point. There's a very large number of explanations among Rishonim and Achronim what the shins represent. So an interesting point, by the way, an interesting side point is how they make the shins. Nowadays, when they make batim of the, so Rashi describes, in other words, what you do is with the shin, Rashi describes that you make like little creases in the leather as you're making the tefillin, so that it looks like a shin. In fact, there are Rishonim who say it doesn't even need to literally be like a shin where all the letters are connected. There are Rishonim who learn that basically it just means you have to have 3 and 4 respectively creases on one side or another, which kind of resemble the heads of a shin without actually being attached to form an actual letter. Nevertheless, the minhag is not to do that. The minhag is to make actual shinim. Nowadays, what they do is they make them in the same hydraulic press where they make the batim themselves, except you have a problem. Some of the Rishonim point out that then what you're doing is it still has to be that the shin would have to be written rather than impressed in, because impressed in is called chak toiches. It's called like you're carving out the spaces where the letter is not, and that's not valid writing. So in practice, what I've read is what they do nowadays is they will use the press to make the shins first, then they will file them down, but at least they have. Now they know where the shins are supposed to be, and then they manipulate it from the inside. They use tools and whatever to work from the inside to actually make the shin stick out as it's supposed to on the 2 sides, and then they use the press again to square it off and make it look nice. In any case, so Abaye is saying that shin is halacha l'moshe m'sinai. And also, he continues with Sorach Shiagir Choritz Lemkain HaTefer. Also, the grooves have to reach down to the stitches. We talked about yesterday that there were grooves between the compartments in the Shorosh. So the grooves can't just go part way down. They have to go all the way down to where the stitches are. the Rishonim actually argue. Rashi is explaining that it means that groove between the compartments of the Shorosh. On the other hand, there are Rishonim who learn that what it means is the choritz of the shin, the choritz shal shin, and that would mean, in other words, the point of the shin actually has to reach down to where the stitches are, and this is why we have an art filling where the bottom of the shin does in fact go all the way down to the bottom of the cube and goes all the way down to where the stitches are. On the other hand, the Gemara continues, says, once it's recognizable, then it's not necessary. According to him, the grooves between the compartments, or the bottom of the shin, according to that Gersa, it's not necessary for it to go all the way down to the bottom, he says. The halacha is like a bias, so therefore it does in fact need to go all the way down. Then Abaye says another din. Hi, kilfa de tefillin, the cloth that you're going to write the parashiyos of tefillin. And we learned the other day there are 3 different types of skins that they use to write on. There's gvil, cloth, and duchsistus, where we said gvil is the unsplit skin. Gvil and cloth and duchsistus is when you split it into 2 layers, and we had a machlokas we showed him which one is which between cloth and duchsistus. But we learned a few days ago tefillin daf have to be written on cloth. So the cloth that you write in there, the cloth, the inner or the outer layer, depending on the different opinions of the Rishonim, the one that you're writing tefillin on, says Abaya, sarach l'mivdikeh, you have to check it in advance before you start writing on it, the duma is feireyusa, because there may be a hole in it. And after all, we need that, as we said before, that you need the perfect writing. The writing needs to be complete to begin with, and not that there's a hole in the middle of the letter. But like that, if there's a hole there, then the writing is not going to be ksiva tama. But again, Rav Dimi Min HaHavdah disagrees and says, "Lo tzarich, you don't need kumas abodik lo. When you're writing, then the pen will feel it. If there's a hole over there large enough to prevent writing, then you'll notice it when you're writing. And if the pen and the ink just go straight over the hole, then it means the hole is so small, then it means you don't have to worry about it." Tosfos brings, and in fact, that is based on a Gemara in Cholin, that is in fact the halacha. So if you have tiny holes, then it's still kosher. In fact, actually, the post can point out, you're allowed to write Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzos on skins of kosher broods. Now, skin of a kosher bird is going to have a whole bunch of little tiny holes in it where the feathers were when the bird was alive. Nevertheless, it's not a problem because the ink is thick enough that it just passes over such tiny holes and it doesn't get stopped by them. So it's not a problem, says Rav Dimi. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Ritzuas Shporas Halacha L'Moshe V'Sinai. The fact that you have to have black Ritzuas, that you have to have black straps for the Shoyad and for the Shoyad and Shorosh, is also Halacha L'Moshe V'Sinai. So the Gemara says, Mesi, I have a contradiction on that. A Braisa says, Tefillin and Kosher and Osin Elabim Minon. Tefillin have to be tied on only with their min. So you have to use the same way as the tefillin themselves are made out of leather. The same way the ritzuas also has to be made out of leather, but they don't just have to be any particular color. Ben yirukas, ben shchurus, ben lavonis. They can be green or yorik in Gemara terminology. Sometimes means yellow. So they can be yellow or black or white. Adumas layasa. Now it is true that you shouldn't. There is one thing you shouldn't do. You shouldn't make them red. Because of the embarrassment. People will think. Rashi explains that the person has a skin condition and he's scratching and is all bloody and therefore and blood from that is getting on the ritzuas. So it'd be embarrassing for him. The Dover Acher, and also because of something else, something improper. Namely, Rashi says, people may think that he had relations with his wife when he was a nidda, and the tefillin straps got mistakenly dyed black, dyed red from that. They used to wear tefillin all day in those times, as we see in many places in Shas, and you even have a case. The Gemara mentions a case in Masechta Sukkah, I think, where a man is having relations with his wife, and then all of a sudden realizes he's wearing tefillin. I mean, I suppose if a person is wearing them all day, tacky, he might forget, and they also had their tefillin were a lot smaller than ours, typically, so I suppose it would be possible that a person might actually forget and leave them on, and then the Gemara discusses what he should do, but the point is, in other words, conceivably, if there's red on the straps, then people may think it got from that. That's how Rashi explains. Rabbeinu Yohonasan brings a different explanation, that the red, the bnei gnai, is people are going to think he's beautifying himself in order to attract the attention of Zoinus. Or another point is also that's brought from Goinim, is it resembles women's ornaments. So in any case, the point is, that's what we're saying. So you have red straps, but the Braisa is saying you can have any other color. Rabbi Yehuda continues, Maisa b'talmidah shel Rabbi Akiva. It happened with a particular Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, shel kosher tefillah, v'lashonas shel tchelis. He was tying on his tefillin using strips of blue dyed wool. V'loy amaloy davan. Rabbi Akiva didn't say anything. So you're telling me, says Rabbi Yehuda to the Chachamim, that the tefillin has to have leather straps. We see here this guy was using cloth straps, and it wasn't a problem. And says Rabbi Akiva, says Rabbi Yehuda, efshar oset tzadik ra talmidoy v'loy michabay. How could it be that Rabbi Akiva saw his Talmud wearing it with cloth straps and he didn't object? Obviously, it must be fine. So they said, hey, yeah, it could be. First of all, maybe Rabbi Akiva never saw him wearing those tefillin with the cloth straps. In fact, if he had seen it, he wouldn't have allowed it. So therefore, no, you can't have a proof from there that it is in fact allowed because Rabbi Akiva didn't necessarily see this Talmud doing this. Similarly, it happened with Hukinus, the son of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hukinus. It was named after his grandfather, as of course is very common.
this Hyrcanus as well was putting on his tefillin, using it with again, he was putting them on with straps of purple dyed wool. The Loi Amalei Dover, and Rabbi Elazar didn't say anything to him either. Same thing. All Jews of Yehuda. Efsha Oisat Sadik Ra Bnoi Vlei Michabai. How could it be that that Sadik Rabbi Elazar saw his own son wearing tefillin with straps of purple wool, and he didn't say anything? So obviously it must be fine. So you could say, in other words, fine. A Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. Look, Rabbi Akiva had thousands of Talmudim, so maybe he didn't happen to notice this particular Talmud. But when it's his own, when it's Rabbi Eliezer's own son, surely we have to imagine that he saw it, and then we have to assume that he saw it, and therefore obviously if he allowed it, then it must be fine. But still, the Chacham said to Rabbi Yehuda, "Hein, yes, in fact, Loi Ra Oisei, we can be sure Rabbi Eliezer did not see him. Vim Ra Oisei Lo Hein Manicha, and if he had seen him doing that, he wouldn't have allowed him because they definitely need leather straps." You have Macholikus Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim whether you need dafka leather straps or not. The halacha is, of course, like the Chachamim, and therefore you do need straps. You do need leather straps. In any case, the point is that Katoni Mia, the Braisa, at any rate, says Ben Yerukas, Ben Shchodes, Ben Levanas, that these straps can be green or black or white. So what do you mean that Halacha L'Moshe Messina, that they have to be black? So the answer is like Kasha, Kan Bifnim, Kan Mibachutz. We're talking about the inside, the side that's clear, the side that rests on your skin versus the outside. The outside has to be black, but the inside can be whatever color you want. So the Gemara says even b'fnim. Yeah, but if it's the inside side, my gnai v'davacha, then how is there gnai? Or how is there a problem of davacha? How is there a problem of people are going to misunderstand what happened over here? It's on the inside. It's closer to his skin. They're not going to see it. And the answer is ikazimnim demishapchen lei, because sometimes the ritzuas may turn inside out, and then people are going to see the red side. So in other words, if they're green or white on the inside, then fine. If people will realize that if it got turned around by accident, they're not going to think that he has the straps themselves are white or green, and they won't think that he's being over on the halacha. But when you have red involved, then there's gnai v'davacha, according to the different explanations, and therefore we don't want to have it. So it comes out from the Gemara that it is fine to have the insides of the straps be whatever color you want. The Rambam writes, the best thing really is to have them black on both sides, and some people talk to do that. Some people will get straps that are black on both sides. Most people don't, and they have the straps, so indeed just the natural color of the leather on the inside. It starts out white, and over the years, as you wear tefillin, it turns brownish, and the outside has to be solid black.
And if it's not solid black, you're not yotzei?
So it depends what part, actually. You really only have a certain part of the ritzuas that are actually necessary for the mitzvah. Strictly speaking, all you need is that the ritzuas that go, in the case of the shoyad, the part that goes around the bicep, and with shorosh, the part that goes around the head, those have the dinim, that those have the full dinim of ritzuas. Everything beyond that, everything beyond the knot really is not, strictly speaking, required api halacha. It's a very, very strong minhag, but so if that part is not so black, then you're not so bad. But yeah, if the area around the biceps or around the head loses the black color, then yeah, you'd have to have it repainted. Nowadays they sell little pens that you can use to repaint it, for example. I remember a few years back here in Crown Heights, the Soifrim had sold some tefillin where they'd gotten their straps from a vendor, which they didn't realize the vendor had, instead of actually dyeing the straps black, he had basically applied like a black plastic layer that was bonded to the tefillin, and then after a while it would peel off and you had a problem, so they had to replace all those ritzuas.
That's neither a banan.
Well, we're saying that the fact that they have to be black, we're saying is halacha l'moshe Messina. So you have to keep an eye on it. Tosfos also brings in this connection, by the way, what about the batim? Now, the Gemara is not saying that the batim need to be black. So therefore, and Tosfos says, in fact, some people do in fact make the batim white. And that's not a problem because halacha l'moshe Messina is only as far as the ritzuas. On the other hand, the accepted halacha is that the batim should be black as well. In fact, the Rambam actually learns. The Rambam says that what the Gemara means over here is the inside of the ritzuas should match the color of the batim. So it would come out, in other words, since uh, since as Rambam writes, similar to Tosfos over here, that technically the batim could be any color, so whatever color you make the batim, you make the ritzuas to match. However, then the Rambam says that the beauty of tefillin is that it should be all solid black, and then the Rambam says again, and that would mean that the reverse side of the ritzuas should also be black. In practice, most people don't do that. You have the bias is black, the outside of the ritzuas is black, but the inside, the reverse side of them is the natural color. Gemara goes on. Tana, we learn in a braisa, tefillin meruboes halachal Moshe Mitzrayim. The fact that tefillin has to be square is halachal Moshe Mitzrayim. In fact, when the Rambam brings in the Rambam and Hilchos Tefillin brings that starts by describing what tefillin are and describing the basic concept of them. So he starts by saying that there are ten dinim regarding tefillin. Which are halachal Moshe Mitzrayim, and he starts listing all these things that were 10 things that are in tefillin, 10 rules about tefillin, all halachal Moshe Mitzrayim, all of them are active, and the tefillin would be possible if any of them were done. And he goes on, and many of them, first he describes the writing of it, but then he goes on to mention the other things that we're mentioning in the Gemara over here, that the tefillin have to be square, and that they have to be, that the ritzuas have to be black, and that they have to, and they have to have a tetura, and they have to have a mavarta, and so forth, all the other details we've been mentioning so far. So the Gemara says, when we say that the tefillin has to be square, omer apapa b'tofron, it means as far as the stitches, so the stitches themselves have to be in a square pattern, how are the tefillin sewn up? So you have this cube of the tefillin, then you have underneath it, you have the titura, like we talked about before. When you're sewing the titura, make sure that the titura remains square after the stitching. So it means the titura itself has to remain square, and the stitches themselves are in a square pattern as well. Tosfos brings that there are some who hold that maybe only the Torah itself has to be square and not the bias, but the halacha is that the bias itself has to be square as well. And they also have to be squared off as far as the diagonals. In other words, you can't have that the tefillin are going to be like a diamond or parallelogram shape where you have all four sides are the same length, but the diagonals are different. You have to have the diagonals are also equal. In other words, it has to be a square, in short. All those details have to be squared. As far as the height, by the way, they don't. The cube of the tefillin does not have to be the same height as length and width, even though in practice, usually it is that way nowadays, but in principle, it can be taller or shorter. The Gemara continues. So the Gemara says, "Lema Messiahle." Should we say that the following brisa supports what Rav Hananel is telling us? Rav Papa is saying that the tefillin have to be perfectly square. Can we say that the following brisa supports him? Ha'osa tefilosei agula. It's Mishnah in Masechta Megillah. Ha'oset filose agula. The Mishnah says over there, if a person makes his tefillin wound, sakana, there's a danger in it, ve'en ba mitzvah, and there's no mitzvah in it. It's sakana because he may walk through a door and accidentally hit the tefillin on the lintel, and then because it's round, then it'll penetrate into his skull. As opposed to if it's smooth on the bottom, then it won't be able to. It's too wide to be able to harm him. So there's a danger in it, and there's no mitzvah, in it. Why? Because the tefillin has to be square. So we see, like the Braisa says, they have to be square, and like the Papa says, they have to remain square even after you stitch them up. But the Gemara says, "Omar a Papa, that's not really a proof, because masnisin David kiam guza." The Mishnah doesn't necessarily mean when it's a little bit rounded; it just means where the whole bottom of it is rounded like a walnut, for example. So, in other words, let's say it could be round only in two dimensions and flat on the bottom. Rashi describes it could be, let's say, like a ring. Then the Mishnah is not necessarily implying that would be a problem, because then you wouldn't have that sakana. Only when you have it's round in three dimensions, then the Mishnah is saying that it would be a danger. So while it is true that the tefillin has to be square and they have to remain square even after you sew them, so in other words, as Rashi says, you don't want to pull the stitches too tight and make the Kichura deformed and make it not a perfect square anymore, the Mishnah is not really supporting that point, because the Mishnah is just saying that you can't have the base of them be rounded in the third dimension. Next, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna, Tfilin, Kol Zman Shepnei Tavla Kayemes. As long as the outer surface of the bottom is intact, says Rav Huna, even if inside, now remember you have the fingers of the glove that make up the compartments of the shorosh. So you have between one and the next there are two layers of leather. You have let's say for example between the compartment that contains kaddish and the one v'hayikim yacha, you have where they meet up. You have one thickness of the leather that forms the left side of the Kaddish compartment, and then it goes down until it goes down together with the groove, like we said before, down to the bottom of the bias, and then it comes up from there on the other side, and you have the right side of the Hoyakiv Yaha. So now, Rav Huna is saying, as long as the outside is intact, even if on the inside that one or both of those layers of leather is torn, then the tefillin would still be kosher, says Rav Huna. There are different other explanations among Rishonim that have different explanations. The Rambam understands that Rav Huna is talking about the stitches, that as long as one stitch, that even if the stitches are ripped, then it's still fine, subject to the conditions that the Gemara is going to go on to say. The tour holds that it refers to the titura. Rav Chista says not necessarily. Nifsiku shtayim cheres. If two of them are broken, then it's still kosher. Shtolish psulis. But if three or more of those walls are ripped, then the tefillin would be possible. In practice nowadays, they have there's different materials that they the batim have to be made out of leather, as we said. But you have there are different types of batim that are made nowadays. You have what they call gasos, where they make them from the skin of a bull, or sometimes even a buffalo, I'm told. And that's very, very tough. That can last for decades, for I know even centuries, and not rip. But then they also have there are batim made from less tough skins, they call them dakos, and those are the kind that the Gemara is describing over here that are more possibly prone to tear back then when they didn't have hydraulic presses and things like that, and probably most tefillin were in fact made out of softer skins like that where they could more easily work with them, but because they're softer, they could also tear. So Rav Chista is saying, let's say that we're talking about the walls between the batim, then we're saying if two of them are ripped, then fine, but if three of them are ripped, then no good. And Omar Rava, and Rava explains, Hod Amit Shtayim Kshayris, when you're telling me that's kosher of two of them, Lo Yamar and Ela Zesh Loi Kenegad Zeh. That would only be if they're not one adjacent to the other. Meaning, Rashi describes, so you would have, let's say, so let's say, for example, you have the wall between Kaddish, the wall between Kaddish and Vahayukiv Yacha is ripped on the Kaddish side, meanwhile, the corresponding wall on the Vahayukiv Yacha side is intact. So then you pass by Vahayakiv Yacha. You have the wall between it and Shema in Rashi Tefillin. So then let's say that wall is also intact, and then you have the other side of the wall between the side that's touching the Shema parchment is ripped. So you have, in other words, there are rips in the rips in the left side of the first compartment and the right side of the third compartment. But meanwhile, the entire second compartment between them is fine. And Rava says, then it would be fine. Abel zeh keneged zeh. If it's one opposite the other in two adjacent compartments, psulis, then it would be possible. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is that it means within the two walls that are one right next to the other on the two sides of the groove. So let's say, for example, the wall of Kaddish and the wall of Vahayakiv Yacha, if you have, there's a hole or a rip in both of those walls, one right next to the other. So then it would be fine if it's Zesh Aloika Neged Zeh. If, for example, So if you have the bias between them, then it would be in other words, you have in that group you have the two walls are ripped. Zeshalik and Agadzeh would be that the walls are torn in two different grooves. So let's say, for example, a wall of Kaddish on a wall of the Hayakiv Yaha on one side and also on the other side, one where it faces towards Kaddish, the other where it faces towards Shema, then it would be possible. But if it was Zeshalik and Agadzeh, if it was one not adjacent to the other, let's say, for example, the first and the third, then it would be kosher. So different explanations of what it means exactly, what exactly is ripped. And again, according to the Rambam, we're not even talking about the leather between the compartments. According to the Rambam, we're talking about the stitches. So in other words, if two stitches are ripped, one next to the other, or three, even one not next to the other, then the tefillin would be possible. So v'zev k'neged zenami, and Rava continues, v'zev k'neged zenami, even when they're one next to the other, lo yamoran, when would we say it's possible? Ela b'chadkasa, only when the tefillin are new. Because if the tefillin are new and already the leather of the compartments is ripping, then it means that they were made badly in the first place. Ava b'atikta, but if it's old tefillin, less one ba, then there's not a problem with it. Because then, fine, tefillin got old and they rip, it's not considered such a problem. The Rif actually has a geusa the other way around. That's the other way around. If it was old tefillin, then it's a problem. And if it's new tefillin, then it's fine. So in other words, according to that way of looking at it, Rabbi Yohanan explains that when it's new ones, the leather is still strong, so there's less of a chance that it'll rip further. As opposed to with old ones, it's more likely that the rip is going to get bigger and bigger. Okay, how exactly do we define new and old? At what point do the tefillin go from new to old? Rabbi Yosef says, Kol hecha ki mitli be b'sholcha. If you were to grab a hold of the leather and pull it, and then pull it and stretch it out for hodr cholim, and then you let go of it, then it will bounce back to where it was before. Atikosa, then those are considered old tefillin. Because then, in other words, like the shape of it is already embedded in it, and therefore they're not going to change shape so easily. The idach, and the other way around, if when you stretch it, it remains stretched, chadtosa, then we would consider it new tefillin. Here also, the Rif has a geusa the other way around, that if it goes back to its original shape, then it would be called new, and otherwise if it stays stretched out, then it means that it's old. The inami, or another way you could define it, kol hecha dechimitle debimisna, if when you hang the tefillin by their straps, asya basre, and the tefillin themselves will follow it, in other words, doesn't break off of the strap, chadtosa, then we would call it new, ve'idach, and if not, atikta, then they're considered old. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is that, again, it's talking about the leather stretching, where if the leather stretches as a result of that, then it's called new, whereas if the leather doesn't stretch, meaning in other words, it's already old and then fixed in place like that, then it's considered new. So again, the Rambam's definition in particular, the Rambam's definition of this halacha is somewhat different. He explains that we're not talking about the walls between the batim. We're talking about the stitches. So he explains similarly that the Rambam defines, in other words, if you were to take some of the leather where the stitches are ripped and hang the tefillin by that area, and the rest of it remains intact, the rest of the stitches don't break, then we consider it new. If the tefillin are so old and the stitches are so weak, that if you were to hang it up in that area where the stitches are ripped, and more of them would rip, then it would be possible and you have to resell them. Okay. Now let's talk more about the ritzuris of the tefillin. Abaya have a Yosef Kameh de Rav Yosef. Abaya was one time sitting as a Talmud in front of Rav Yosef. Ifsikli Ritzua de Tfili, and the Ritzua, the strap of his tefillin, broke. Omalei Maula Miftere. So he asked Rav Yosef, are we allowed to take and tie the broken ends back together and be able to continue using the strap? The pasuk says "Kshavtam." Shaday Kshiratama means the same way as we learned before. Kshavtam means Kshivatama, means a complete, perfect writing. The same way that Kshavtam, the tying of it also has to be a Kshiratama, also has to be a complete, also has to be a perfect tying without there being places in. So first of all, Rashi says it has to be a nice tying. If you have another, if there's another knot elsewhere in the Ratzua besides the one that's supposed to be there, besides the Dalet knot, then it's not really Kshira Yofa. Or the other point is it has to be a complete Ratzua, not one that's tied together. Okay. Amaleram Acha Breder of Yosef Ravashi. So Rav Acha Breder of Yosef asked Ravashi, Mala Mitzbere, how about though? Fine, you can't tie it, as Rav Yosef is saying, but how about, can you take the two torn ends and sew them together, and have the stitches stick out on the inside? So this way, from the outside, it'll look like it's still intact, and only from the inside would you be able to tell that, it's whole. Only from the inside would you be able to tell that it's stitched. Omar, so Rabashi answers, Puk chozi, my amadivar, go see what people are noyig. People are noyig not to do that. If the resources are ripped, they just get new ones, so therefore don't do that either. So in other words, Rashi is saying that it means you have to be machmer. Tosfos points out that the expression puk chozi mai amadivar is actually meant lakula, means that you could do that, because we find in other places where that phrase is used to mean that you can go lakula. Now, the Rosh explains, and this is brought lahalacha, that again, like we said before, only the part of the Ritzua, only certain parts of the Ritzua are considered essential for its function, the parts that go around the biceps and around the head, and therefore those are the parts where if it got ripped, then you can't re-sew it or retie it, as the Gemara is saying over here, like this, the rest of it that hangs down from there. Technically, it's not a problem, because there, the issue of Kshautam, Kshidatama, doesn't really apply. So the truth is actually, at least when it comes, there is a certain amount of the straps of the tefillin shel rosh that is supposed to hang down past the knot, and there is a certain amount that's supposed to be on the tefillin shel yad, to be able to stretch to the middle finger and wind over there. So therefore, it's not so simple to just say if all of it is gone beyond that, then it's fine. But basically. Basically, though, there is you don't need the, like this, for example, when we have our tefillin shel rosh, for example, the straps hang down quite a bit. Most of that hanging down is not actually required lahalacha. It's based on Kabbalah and whatever, and therefore, so if areas in that, if the straps got shorter over there, then it would be less of an issue. But you do have to have a certain, you do so. So in Shulchan Aruch, actually it brings that there are those who follow Tosfos and say that it would be allowed, to throw it over there, but yesh omrim that no, if it's the part that goes around the head, or around the, or actually with the arm tefillin, it would actually be, if it's any place in the area, not just which goes around the bicep, but then where you have, there has to be enough of it left to be able to stretch to your middle finger, and then wind it around, your middle finger, and then tie it. So then, in that case, according to that way of looking at it, that's the minimum length that's necessary for the tefillin shel yad. You don't have to do the seven windings around the arm. That's a minhag. But then the point is, then you have, so anything outside of that, you could in fact sew it or tie it. If a person has, for example, a person doesn't have any other tefillin or any other resource available, then the post can say that you can sew it even in the area before that, following Tosfos' opinion, because look, you have a mitzvah of tefillin. But basically, you have a certain part of it which should be intact, namely with the shel rosh until past the knot, and with the shel yad under the area around the biceps, and then the parts that, and then stretch it from there to the middle finger and wind it around there. Okay. The Gemara continues in this connection. Omer Papa, Gardumi Ritzuis Ksheris, the leftovers of Ritzuis. So in other words, if you're exactly that. So let's say, for example, so you have the, after you put the Tefillin Shel Rosh on, now if you have the parts that hang down from there, if they're broken off and only a little is left, then Ksheris. However, the Gemara says, Velav Milsihi, that's not really correct. There does have to be a certain minimum thing past that. How do we know that? Mid Amrit b'nei Rav Chiya, because we find that the sons of Rav Chiya, their names were Yehuda and Chizkiya, said, Gaudume Tcheles, the leftovers of Tcheles, so we're going to talk about at the end of this perek and the beginning of next, all about tzitzis. So if you have the Tcheles strings, if you originally had Tcheles strings the proper length, and then they got broken off, and you have less than, and you have less than the shear, the Gaudume Ezev, and similarly if you have the leftovers of stalks of Ezev, of sprigs of Ezev that you use for Parah Adoma and for various other purposes, so those Ksherin, those are kosher. But you notice they didn't mention the Ritzuas, implying Hosam who to Teshmishim Mitzvah. You know why? By Tcheles and Ezev it would be kosher, even if they're mostly gone, is because they were the Teshmishim Mitzvah. They were used for a mitzvah, but they themselves don't have intrinsic kedusha. So therefore, so even if you have most of them is so most of them is gone, but you can still be Yotze with the rest. Abel Hacha, but here when we're talking about the Ritzuas, the Teshmishim Kedusha, here they're Teshmishim Kedusha, they're used in service of the tefillin, which themselves have kedusha, and therefore the ritzuas have a higher degree of kedusha, loy, then we would say that it's no good if they're ripped off. So Rabbi Yehonasan explains that when it comes to tcheles and ezov, it's only zekelim anveyu. So therefore, originally they were nice. So now we don't care if they've gotten broken off. But here with tashmishik kedusha, then you need them to be the proper size. Well, the Gemara says Meklal de Islu Shiura. Okay, so evidently there has to be a minimum shear for these straps that come down from the Tefillin Shorosh. How much is that shear? Amar Rami Bahama, Amar Rishlachish ad Etzbet Surada. Up until the index finger, there has to be long enough to go to the index finger. What does that mean? Rav Kahana Machli Kofuf. Rav Kahana would demonstrate that means, in other words, that it would mean the space that a person can open up maximum between his index finger and his middle finger, that would be, it's called kofof, literally means bent. So in other words, it's smaller than the next shear that the Gemara is going to say, and therefore that would be considered. So Rav Kahana says it has to be that minimum length. Rav Ashi machvi poshut. Rav Ashi would show it's the amount that a person could spread out between his index finger and his thumb, which is a much larger space. There are different other explanations among Rishonim what it means, but it sounds like Tosfos says it sounds like we're talking about the Tefillin Shorosh. But Tosfos brings that actually no. First of all, Etzbet Surad brings from the Aruch. First of all, Etzbet Surad, according to that, doesn't necessarily mean the index finger. It means the middle finger, and it means like we were just saying about the Tefillin Shoriyad strap having to reach all the way to there. So therefore, in other words, we would be talking about when we're talking about that the how much has to be left. Then, like we said, it would have to be enough to go around the biceps and enough to be stretched out to the middle finger and wound around over there. But then Tosfos also discusses that it does mean also the Shorosh ones, they're also supposed to go down quite a bit on the body. Tosfos mentions different amounts that one of them should reach at least to his heart and the other one to his navel. Tosfos says, I don't know a source for that, but maybe there's a medrash for that. Lamaisa are minegas that they're even longer than that, based on things from the Zohar, that one of them goes down to the Mila area and the other one goes down even below that. Tosfos also mentions in this connection there's a minimum width for the ritzuris as well. They have to be, Tosfos says, larger than a grain of wheat and smaller than a grain of barley. They can be wider than that, but that's the minimum width of them. The post can give figures for them. So in practice, I mean, all ritzuris are made much wider than that, but sometimes you have over the years, the ritzuris deteriorate, and sometimes you have parts of them that are too narrow, so then you would have to have a sofer check them and make sure they're still wide enough. Okay. So what do we do with the straps that hang down from the shorosh? The Gemara says Rabba kotulahu. Rabba would tie it. He would tie the shorosh. He would tie the knot of the shorosh. And then the rest that hangs down from there, he would put behind him. They would be hanging down his back. Rav Acha bar Yaakov kotulahu metalis lahu. Rav Acha bar Yaakov would also tie on the tefillin, but then the part that hang down, he would braid together. The part that hangs down, he would braid together. Ma'abred Rabbana, Avod Kedidan, and Ma'abred Rabbana did like what we do, which is that the common practice is that we just have the tefillin straps hanging down, they go over your shoulders, and then they hang down in front of you, and Ma'abred Rabbana did that, and we do that as well. So there are different other explanations among Rishonim exactly what the Gemara means over here. There are Rishonim who explain that we're referring over here to the Tefillin Shoyad, and then the question is, what would he do with the rest of the Tefillin Shoyad strap? Would he actually stretch it to his middle finger and tie it? And then wind it around there and then tie it, or do different ones, whether they would do that, whether after they wound it around their middle finger, whether they would leave the rest untied, whether they would tie it, etc. The Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yehuda b'Reidev Shmo Bar Shilas Nishmeder Av, Kesher Shol Tefillin Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. The knot of the tefillin, the fact that you have to have a valid shaped knot in the tefillin, Shorosh Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. This is also Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. So this way you have the name Shin Dalad Yod. Rashi explains the Shin we said before is on the bias, the Dalad is the knot of the Shorosh, and the Yod is the knot of the Shoyad. The fact that you have to have that knot. Is a halacha l'moshe m'sinai. You have the different ways that you have the different minhagim that there are as far as making that dalad knot. It seems that the older minhag was to make it as a square, so it's like two dalads, one inside the other, kind of. And that used to be the pretty much the universal minhag. And then eventually it was developed the knot that many people wear nowadays, including Lubavitcher Chassidim, which is that it actually looks like a single dalad. Okay, it's the fact that you have to have that knot is halacha l'moshe m'sinai. An interesting question in all of this is whether in fact you have to actually retie the knot every day. There are opinions that say that you do, in fact, in order to be yotzu, chautam, when it comes to the shoyad, in particular the Alter Rebbe's knot, which Lubavitcher Chassidim use, has the advantage that this way you kind of are retying it every day because the it's made in such a way that it's adjustable in size, and therefore you adjust it and you put on the tefillin. Okay, so the Gemara says, Omer Nachman, Yehim Labar, that when you're making the Dalad knot, the nice side has to be on the outside, meaning, in other words, the black of the straps has to be on the outside, when you're making the knot. So the Gemara tells Rav Ashi have a Yosef Kamei Demar, Demar Zotra. Rav Ashi one time was sitting as a Talmud in front of Mar Zotra. Is Hapchalei Ritzua de Tefillin, and the Ritzua of his Tefillin got turned inside out. Omalei, so Rav Zotra's Tefillin, that is. Omalei, so Rav Ashi says, Lesovel Amar V'Nayein Labar. Rebbe, don't you hold of what we just said, that the nice side, the Dalet, has to be visible from the outside, and you have it upside down. Omalei, Lavadato, he said, Mar Zotra says, I didn't realize it had gotten turned inside out. Elsewhere, the Gemara mentions about some Amiroim who, if the strap got turned inside out, they would actually fast, because the Gemara mentions, I think Rav Huna would do that, that one time the tefillin, the strap got turned inside out, and he fasted for it. The post can talk about that's an appropriate thing to do, but again, we're talking about primarily only the part that goes around the head and the part that goes around the bicep. The rest of it is less important. Okay. Speaking of the knot, the pasuk says, "V'ro'u kol amei ha'aretz kishem Hashem nikra alecha." All the nations of the world will see that the name of Hashem is called on you, v'yoru mimecha, and they will fear you. Tanya, we learn in a blaise, Rabbi Eliezer and Gadol Omer, Rabbi Eliezer and Gadol. This is regular Rabbi Eliezer and Shas. Rabbi Eliezer and Hokinus says, "Elu tefillin shabaroish." This refers to the tefillin on the head. Because most of the name of Hashem, the Shin and the Dalet, is located on it, and therefore that's more Shem Hashem more than the Tefillin Shoyad. Tosfos actually points out that no, the Dalet and the Yod are not really considered letters. Tosfos brings from various places in Shas where we see only the Shin on the Tefillin is considered a letter. The Dalet and the Knot and the Yod are not really considered are not actually considered letters because they're made by tying these straps rather than by writing. So therefore, they explain the reason why Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol is saying that it refers to the Tefillin Shorosh is because the Tefillin Shoyad are not as visible. They go on your arm, closer to your body. The Tefillin Shorosh are much more visible. This is, by the way, why the idea that the Yorum Mimeka is part of when the Rebbe first began the Mitzvah Tefillin a few days before the Six-Day War, when Israel was in tremendous danger. That was one of the points that Rebbe made at the time, is that we want that the Goyim should be afraid of us, and wearing Tefillin will enhance that. Oh, no, the thing as far as the knot of the tefillin, Hashem says to Moshe, you want to see my glory, or you want to see my presence. Vasiroisius kapi, Hashem says, I'm going to place you in the cave over there, and then I'll cover you, so to speak, with my hands, so you don't see the full radiance of the Shekhinah. Then Hashem says, Vasiroisius kapi, I will remove my hand, and you will see my back. So what is he seeing on the back? I'm going to find about business. I'm going to Shimon Chasida Melamed. This teaches us. That Hashem showed Moshe, so to speak, the knot of the tefillin shorosh behind his head. Hashem himself, where is tefillin? Tefillin de more amamaksi behu. So Hashem is showing him that knot, representing, among other things, Hashem is showing him the connection that he has with the world. The Rambam actually makes the point, it's in today's Perakachad of Rambam, that what it means is, that the same way as you might have, you see a person from the front, and you know him well, even Moshe couldn't have that level of perception of Elokus, but he can have the level of perception that, like, for example, you recognize somebody from the back, and you recognize him. You can recognize him among a crowd from the back. That's, so to speak, the level of awareness of Hashem that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to reach. To finish off, as far as the halachas of where to put the tefillin shorosh, the Gemara says, Omer of Yehuda, kesher shol tefillin ser shehela maila. The knot of the tefillin has to be up above, higher up on the head, rather than down on the neck. To represent that the Jewish people should be up above, should be higher and more important rather than lower. So in other words, when you put on the tefillin shorosh, what you do is the knot should be, you have in the back of the head, there's the groove that goes down from the middle of the back of your head down to your neck. The tefillin, the knot should be partially above it. You have a bump, the off support, it's called in medicalese. So the knot should be on that, and then a little bit of it will be in the groove. That's called the myla, that it should be up above. With sochi he klapit pnim, and then also the knot has to be klapit ponim. It has to be exactly opposite the face. It should be exactly in the middle, in the back. Kadeshi yisrael lefonim v'loy la'ocher, representing that the Jewish people should be towards the front and not towards the back. Meaning, in other words, that the Jewish people should be, like, so to speak, primary in Hashem's thoughts and not in the back and not like off to the side. Rashi says another explanation is first explanation is klapit ponim means opposite the face, meaning in other words exactly opposite the face on that protrusion from the skull. The other explanation Rashi says is the word is not ponim but pnim, meaning the inside, meaning like we said before, the dalet has to be facing out in the right direction, that you should have the black side of the dalet, the side which is visible as a dalet, should be visible on the outside rather than, like we said before, the knot shouldn't be inside out. So we'll continue tomorrow. Beis Hashem, we'll talk about the dinim of putting on tefillin and making the bracha and where exactly you put them and so on and so forth.